Hello, my name is Ed Frawley, and of course I own Learburg. This is a really good question that we got into our Ask Cindy portal on the front of Learburg, and you don't have to be a customer of Learburg. My wife answers them every day, but this is a unique question because it's about a canine handler that has been a canine handler for 3 months, and he's been bitten by his dog 6 times. And he wanted to know whether this was something that could be fixed. And I'm going to read the question, and then I'm going to talk about it, because it's a topic that's kind of close to my heart. I have a soft spot in my heart for police canine handlers. I did it for 10 years myself. I bred police service dogs for 35 years. And I've been around dogs like he's going to talk about here a lot. I used to import dogs from Europe and sell them to trainers that in turn turned them into police service dogs. I would import selection-tested police service dogs. And a lot of those dogs that I used to import, and this is back in the mid to late 80s, were dogs that were sold to a family as a pet, and as they grew up, they got to be a little dominant. They got to be a little rank, and the people couldn't handle them, so they would sell them. And I would end up getting them, and then I'd have to figure out how to handle them for a while before we moved them on into various vendors' kennels. And knock on wood, I was never badly bitten. I really wasn't hardly bitten at all. And really it came down to the relationship that I would establish with these dogs when they came in, as far as showing them that I was always fair with them. But let me read the question. And then we're going to talk about a few things that probably a lot of people haven't given any thought to. It said, I have a 3-year-old German Dutch Shepherd that's got some mix of Malinois in it. I was wanting to know if the pack structure would help me with the training on this dog. I've been having issues with his obedience and also with his out commands. He has bitten me at least 6 times. 3 when I was using the remote collar, and the other times when doing scenarios, police scenarios, in training. Do you have any suggestions that could help with my issues? We've done several vehicle searches. We've done 2 arrest warrants, 1 apprehension, and a few tracks, and 1 article search. So he's had, in 3 months, he's had some experience working with this dog. Our trainer wants me to break this dog down by using punishment to correct his bad behavior. The trainer has been doing dog training for over 25 years, but he's an old school mentality guy. I received this dog after another handler had him for 2 months. Now, he doesn't say anything here about the other handler getting dog bit, but I'll guarantee you a lot of money, that's why you got the dog. I have now trained with the dog for 6 weeks. During that time, it was more training on the fundamentals of tracking, apprehension, and narcotic searches. Probably not the way to start this. I've not done obedience, and I've been feeding the dog by hand to see if that will help with teaching the dog to bond with me. So now, keep in mind here, back at the beginning of this question, he wanted to know about pack structure. And really, dogs that are like this are either dogs that are getting corrections, kind of strong dogs, that are getting corrections that they don't understand why they're getting corrections, and they'll turn and aggress into the handler. Or they're dogs with rank drive. And I need to talk a little bit about rank drive, because probably 99% of the people or more that watch this video don't really understand what rank drive is. Rank drive is the inability of a dog to accept a position within a pack structure. A dog with strong rank drive always wants to be the top dog in a relationship. And this is not something that you can train into the dog, it's also not something you can take out of the dog. You can manage rank drive. You can manage a dog that always wants to fight you, but there's always that thing in the back of his mind where they will hang around and look for an opportunity to fight you. And really, it's a pain in the butt. You know, years ago, people used to think, God, we like these rank drives. That's what we really want to have in a police service dog. As we now know, that's dead wrong. We don't want to have police service dogs that are biting their handler. We don't want to have a police service dog that's constantly challenging the handler for authority. It gets to be a real pain in the rear. The thing about it is, though, not a lot of dogs are strong rank drive dogs. It's not common at all. You can have dogs that are reactive. That's not rank drive. A lot of civilians will have dogs that are reactive, that are growly, that are doing whatever, but they're not ranked dogs. They can very quickly, on these reactive dogs, they can very quickly, if it started young, be taught that you're the person that they have to mind. You're the person that's their leader. And this doesn't have to be with a young dog. It doesn't have to be with an ass kicking. You can accomplish it through your management. You can accomplish it through your training. Dogs that have gotten to be older, that have learned, been allowed to practice bad behavior and aggress into a handler, not because they have rank drive, just because of the way they had been handled. Those dogs can also be fixed. It's going to take more pressure to fix them, but they can be fixed. And that doesn't mean that that dog is a rank dog. If you see a rank dog once, you're going to know it. It's hard to say and describe it through an email. And that might be what's happened here. So I have a lot of empathy for this police officer. He's wanted to be a canine handler, obvious. He's been bit 6 times. How many people watching this video would have a working dog that had bit them 6 times, and then they would go on the internet and try and find a solution that would stop that? He wants to stay and become a good police canine handler. So I owe him some ideas to check. And the follow-up questions are basically what I'm going to talk about right now and see if he answers them. But the first thing I would want to know is, what's the training history on this dog? Did he go through a vendor school, like a 6-week school? One of my best friends, Kevin Sheldahl, has been training police service dogs since 1982. He was a retired canine handler. He runs a 6-week training course in New Mexico. We'll put his URL here for those that are interested. He doesn't take civilians. He only trains police officers. Right now, I think he's on his 70th or 71st 6-week course, and each course has 10 to 20 handlers. So do the math on that. And he supplies the dogs to these departments that send new handlers in there. My point here is, I would want to probably run this dog through a selection test. And it has to be done not by this guy that's got 25 years of experience and has his head stuck in a hole and doesn't know what reward-based training is and doesn't know how to develop a relationship with a dog. The only thing this guy knows is put a lot of pressure on the dog and make him give up. Well, if it's a strong rank drive, good luck with that, because that dog may give up for a little while, but he's going to be looking for an opening where he can get at you and try and win and put himself in first place. So this guy with 25 years, he needs to retire and go away. Because I think if he's telling this officer this now, it's too late for him too. It's just a bad situation. So I would want to know what the training history is on this dog. Who trained him? How long was he in training? I would like to know what he did with this other handler that had him for 2 months. I would like to know a little bit more about the bite history. What exactly triggered this dog to turn and bite the handler during these times? One thing that he said was, that I got out of it was, He got bit three times when he was using a remote collar. So he should stop using a remote collar. And he should focus on building a relationship with the dog. I'd also like to know a little bit about the temperament of the dog. Is it a dog that's highly motivated for rewards? Dogs that are really highly motivated for rewards, be it toy rewards, food rewards, those are dogs that are easier to turn around because they can learn that there are certain things that they can do, that they can get their reward that they want. If it's a dog that doesn't have a lot of motivation for rewards, that's a harder problem. And the reason for that is the only way that you can deal with a dog like that usually is through pressure. That the dog learns, I have to do it. The problem when you have a new handler that's not an experienced dog trainer, he doesn't know how to approach a dog like this, he tries to do reward-based training with him, and it's not quite working, and he's not getting the behavior changes that he wants out of this dog. And so what does he do? He resorts to corrections. And that's the wrong thing to do with a dog like that. You have to back up and approach those dogs differently, and that's not what this video is about. I'm just saying that that's what has to happen. And unfortunately, then when you start to add corrections to that dog, you're not bringing him up in drive, you're taking him down in drive, and then you're running the risk of getting dog bit when you correct too hard or when you correct for something that the dog doesn't really understand what you're asking him to do. And you put him in a position where he has to either fight or submit. It's kind of like learned helplessness, only it's not. Learned helplessness is something where we correct a dog, until the dog gives up, and finally the dog just says, okay, I'm gonna take this, I'm gonna do it. It's kind of like the old yank and crank training. And I came from yank and crank training in the 70s and 80s, where we would take your dog out, we're gonna teach him to heel, we'd put a prong collar on him, walk down the field, do a right-hand turn, wham, give him a hard correction, say heel, give him a correction, and keep taking right-hand turns and keep correcting him. And after a while, the dog just gives up and just follows and goes along with the whole program. You do that enough times with a dog, is he gonna learn how to stay next to you? Yeah, because he wants to avoid that correction. It's avoidance training. It's yank and crank training. And you do that with a dog that's got a bit of a, got some guts, and he's gonna take so much of it, and then he's gonna nail you. So what I would recommend is that this handler needs to back off most of his training right now and just let this dog be a dog. I would start him with marker training. We have an excellent online course that I've done a number of years ago, The Power of Training Dogs with Markers. We have one on the power of training dogs with food and another one on the power of playing tug with your dog. I would back off and I would teach markers with an emphasis on timing. The most important thing about marker training is to make sure you're marking at the exact right time. That's how dogs can learn that, hey, I really like these rewards, and if you're gonna start with food if he's got food rewards, because it's easier than starting with a toy. You start with a toy, and you might have to fight a dog to have him give up the toy. You might have to fight with a dog to make him out the toy. Well, then you've created your own problems. That's why food is better, and if you have to, don't feed the dog for a day. If he still doesn't have a lot of food drive, make sure he has good clean water all the time. Don't feed him for 2 days. When you show up then with little pieces of meat, not Walmart stupid bones, dog treat bones, but good pieces of meat or cheese, whatever the dog likes, he's gonna pay attention to you and he's gonna want that. And feeding from the hand is not a bad idea, but do your training before you feed him. Make sure the dog is hungry, make sure the dog is rested, and then take him out and have your training sessions be short, 1 minute, 2 minutes, put him away. Let him think about what just happened. You and he went out and had a good time. There was no fighting. You didn't try and make him do anything that he didn't want to do. You just wanted to play with the dog. And that's how you're gonna have a relationship with the dog and build on that. I would keep this dog on a leash all the time. I wouldn't jerk him around. I'd take him for a walk on a leash, teach him to pee and poop on a leash. That's an important thing for a police dog to have to learn. And don't jerk him around. And I wouldn't be doing any remote collar training with the dog. I believe that this handler needs to learn how to train with a remote collar. That the handler needs to learn low-level stimulation. With a little bit of luck, the dog will react. to low-level stimulation if you do it right. And you don't start when you are going to use a remote collar. You don't start teaching him to out with a remote collar. That's not what you do. If you're going to use a remote collar, you train an exercise in obedience with reward-based training first. You get that dog so he 110% knows that when you ask him to sit or you ask him to down, he knows what it means and he knows he's going to get a reward. Then you get to a sit, and that's done in a kind of a sterile environment, backyard, wherever. And then you slowly add distractions into the environment. And then when you get to the point where the dog knows what you're asking him to do, but the distraction over there is more interesting, and you ask him to come and he doesn't come, say, no, come, and then you stimulate him. But it can be low-level stimulation, and it can be paired with a leash. We have two excellent online courses on how to learn how to train with a remote collar. Take the time it takes, if you're gonna use a remote collar, take the time it takes for you to learn. The handlers have more to learn about using a remote collar correctly than the dog does. But the key is you don't train behaviors with a remote collar. You train behaviors motivationally and gradually add distractions. Now, if this officer is in a scenario where his department's not going to let him, because it takes time to build a relationship, and if that department's not going to let him take the time and he has to keep this dog and keep working for the dog, working with the dog, and he has to do a scenario, I would say, don't out with a remote collar. Go and do liftoffs. And a liftoff, when the average civilian sees what a liftoff is, they think you're choking the shit out of that dog, and you're not doing that. A good liftoff, when it's done correctly, the dog has a collar up underneath his chin, the handler comes up, he takes a hold of the back of the collar, and it's a handler safety issue. And that is, usually in an apprehension, the dog gets a hold of a guy and your backup comes into the scenario with you. There could be one, two, three other officers there. And you don't want to stimulate the dog with a sharp remote collar where the dog lets go and redirects into your backup. That's a bad thing. That's one way of not having backup. But if you do a liftoff, it's a handler safety thing where you go in, you pick him up, and you put pressure on the collar right here, and it creates a gag reflex. And any civilian that badmouths doesn't understand law enforcement, he doesn't understand working police dogs. But I'm gonna put a video in here to show what a gag reflex looks like. And I'm gonna do a video, probably, I have to think about this, I know I'm going to put it in our police course, because a lot of times officers don't know how to do it correctly. But we're going to show you here how it looks and how easy. And you take it, and the dog lets go, and you pull your dog away. You get him away from the suspect, and more importantly, you get him away from your other handlers so there's not an accidental bite. And you get him away until he calms down, then take the leash, and you have control of your dog. And at that point, the dog is probably, hopefully, has calmed down enough so that he's not going to turn and aggress into you. But if you do this wrong and you're going to use high-level stimulation and you walk up next to that dog and he's biting somebody, and this is often going to happen in scenario training, and you walk up next to this dog and he's biting on the decoy and you say out and he doesn't out, that dog's gonna let go and bite him. And that's what I think happened three times in a row with this dog. So that's an important point too. So just a quick review here, and then I'll close this out, and that is, I would probably start this dog on marker training. I would teach this dog that there is a way that he can get rewards. I would take the time it takes to do it. I wouldn't put a lot of pressure on the dog during any part of this. I wouldn't be doing I'd be very careful about how I handle obedience. And this is another point too, because police canine obedience is not competition obedience like we see in some of the biting dog sports. police canine obedience is just being able to get control of your dog. If you call him back to you, he doesn't have to come and sit in front and move into a heel position. No, he just needs to come to you so you can get control of the dog. I don't care whether he sits, stands, lays down, makes no difference. He doesn't have to go around this side. It's not pretty. It's not a competition. It's a working dog that is doing what you're asking him to do. And I would work this dog in a sterile environment on a long line so you can control him there too with markers and gradually introduce more and more distractions. And along the whole way, keep an eye on the dog. If you don't have somebody that can look and say, no, that's a rank dog, and that's not, I don't think you can fix that. You can't train rank out of a dog. You may get it managed, but it's going to be there, and it's always going to be there. And especially if this dog has already bit people, handlers, and learned that that works for him. So then you better be working this dog in a muzzle a lot. And there are muzzles that we sell that have a little opening in the front that you can pass food rewards through. So words to the warning here, there's a lot to think about. It's hard. You can't answer all the questions through an email. You can't answer all the questions that are needed to be answered here by dreaming up what you think is going on. You need to really know what's going on. So I'm going to close this out here. There's a lot to think about, but once again, I have a lot of respect for this handler that wants to make it work. As I said, how many people would be willing to take six bites from a police service dog, your own police service dog, and still be trying to fix the problem? This may be a dog that shouldn't be a police service dog. And then it's an issue between the department and the vendor where he got it. So that's closing out this scenario. We're going to put some links here at the end of this video on some of the courses I would recommend that this officer consider and get as much training as he can.